Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Casual Coders Podcast Season 2. Today we're talking about fire extinguishers and 3D printers.
I'm Chandler. I like 3D printers.
I am Quentin. I also like 3D printers and I work on fire.
I'm Seth. I like 3D printers and work on fire, lasers, basically building anything.
And of course I'm Ian, and I like setting fires.
Arsonist over here.
I'm thinking about buying a new 3D printer.
The finance at Bamboo Labs, P1P, or the X1 Carbon.
I'm so torn, dude. Like, on one hand, I really want a Prusa Mark IV.
On the other hand, you really want the Big Rep 1.
On the other hand, I either want to get the printer that Kyle bought, which is the Bamboo Labs P1P with the multi-material.
Yeah.
Because Haley is really into the multicolor prints. She keeps seeing them on TikTok and on Facebook, and she really, really, Haley being my wife, she really wants me to do the multicolor prints.
Well, you got to sell them then.
Let's go for the bank. Prusa XL.
Prusa XL? Isn't that
it's only three grand?
Yeah.
It's just money.
It's just money.
If you sell enough, you'll get it back.
Yeah, you work that cushy software job. I think you're good.
I do think that's where it's going to go eventually. I think multi-head extrusion is where it'll go.
Multi-head?
Like with the tool changers?
Tool changer?
Yeah.
Which I'm...
Fair enough.
So, like, I know that the Prusa XL starts at $3,000. Do you guys know how much it costs? Like, I'm going to look it up.
I don't think it starts at three grand.
You don't think it starts?
I think it starts at $2,000 or $1,500. But if you want five tool heads with, like, changing, then it becomes, $3,000 or $4,000.
It's $3,800.
Is it $3,800? Oh, my God.
So as long as you just sell some really good stuff.
I don't know. I mean,
I think for the 5+ I'm building now, that's going to get an enraged rabbit carrot feeder. Because you can do up to 16 colors. It's not in a dryer box, but you just program it out yourself in Clipper.
That's crazy. 16 colors?
Yeah, it's just like the AMSs. But that's been out longer, but you have to build it, so it's not as popular. But it's the cheapest way to go multicolor.
Fair enough.
I have an IDEX printer, and it's kind of a nightmare to calibrate and set up.
Yeah, so the Prusa XL does start at $2,000, and then you start adding tool heads, and that's whenever it starts. It's for every tool head, it's $500.
Yikes.
And then the first two tool heads are 500.
Add the tool heads yourself without buying them directly.
What they do is that they have one tool head, $2,000, two tool heads is $2,500, and then three tool heads is $4,500.
Wait, what? It jumps?
It's like $3,500. Sorry, it's $1,000 for five tool heads.
I think they give you an option between one, two, and five. I don't think they give you.
It's one, two, and five, and then you can either get
semi-assembled
or fully
assembled. But
if you want
multiple materials, you've got to do five tool heads. It's not the like multi-material thing where they split pieces of filament and send them.
Yeah,
all
like
the
AMS
same
does
nozzle.
On the bamboos. No, it's like actually five heads, five different spools of filament.
Is the bamboo AMS compatible with other systems, or is it bamboo proprietary?
I'm pretty sure it's bamboo only.
Proprietary.
That's annoying.
Another option I thought about, if I want to go like somewhere in the middle between a multi-tool changer and a Bamboo Labs AMS system, I would do a Prusa Mark IV with Prusa's multi-material system built in. So with that, it would cost me about $1,300 is roughly what that would run me.
Yeah, the bamboo printers print nicely. I don't love the proprietary nature of them. But...
No, I'm a big fan of...
Well, I mean, everything's kind of open source, but as soon as you change anything in that, you void any warranty that you have.
Yeah, because there is an open source firmware
Not even lawful. It violates Magnuson-Moss.
They're not an American company. They don't have to follow any laws.
Shit, you're right.
They're in China. They don't have to follow
laws.
Oh, right.
Well, they don't follow laws anyway, right? I don't know. Yeah. Is that too political?
Well, that's...
Sometimes the truth is just the truth.
Yeah.
But the Prusa Mark IV apparently is like way faster than the Prusa Mark III. Apparently, some of the software improvements they did, and they have new stepper motors. They have a new 32-bit driver. Like apparently, it's like double to triple the speed of the Mark III.
Yeah, but unless they're doing Core XY, a Core XY system will always be faster.
It is all but they have the linear advance and they have all the correct mathematical corrections to make sure that it's as fast as an i3 system can be.
Right, I don't disagree there. I think it's as fast as an i3 can be, but you'd still be faster on Core XY.
Core XY,
which is what the XL is, I believe. XL is Core XY.
Yes. Yeah.
It's but a that's... problem though. At that price point, you can go bamboo with like the P1S.
Right, you go
P1P.
Bamboo
for the price of what a Mark IV with the multi-material would be. Yeah.
Right.
And you're looking at the same print bed size, and you're proprietary.
Bigger actually,
on both
bamboos
ends.
Are larger.
Is it?
Yeah, like so, a lot. Yeah.
I think the Prusa stuff's mostly open source.
It is.
But at the same time, for the cost of one Prusa XL with five tool heads,
you could get two or three bamboos
with the AMSs and have a whole print farm going instead.
Yeah, the only advantage is the five head system is you can have different filament types. So if you're running like PETG and
PV. We have a roll up PVA right there. Yeah, you can do like the dissolvable supports.
That's what I use.
It seems
my
like you could
for.
Do that with Bamboo's thing as well, but I don't know. It has to. It takes more time, I guess, to ramp the nozzle to whatever new temperature it has to hit.
Well,
but it fully clears the filament path every time, as I understand it.
Yeah, it's just whether or not it could keep varying the nozzle temperature up and down.
Right, exactly.
I just gave him a doorstop I make, and it's TPU and PETG. Mm-hmm. So I'm running two different nozzle temps the whole entire time.
Right, so you've got that time that it takes to ramp up and down. And the
ooze shields don't take much time for the IDEXs. I'm not sure how the XL handles the oozing from each nozzle, but doing that, it just does one quick lap around the print and then dives right in.
Yeah.
Did you see a bunch of people like freaking out about how all the Bamboo printers like waste like the little bits of filament? Apparently, a bunch of people apparently it does add up. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he was talking about it. It was a huge amount of filament. It's like, depending on what you're doing color wise, it's equivalent to the weight of the print in waste material, straight up.
The full weight of the print.
Yeah,
okay.
It can be, depending on what you're printing.
But I thought that was like, that's not...
That's like for small prints, obviously.
Well, I didn't think that was just Bamboo, though. I know that the multi-material system in the Prusa does that, too, but it does it in a simpler way where it has a different way where it has a purge block.
Oh, Bamboo also has
the
purge block.
You can do a purge block in Bamboo, yeah. It's just, it takes up your print space.
Yeah.
But that's the same system they're all going to, so Creality's... is going to be extremely similar, so is Anycubes.
I imagine if you've got multiple printheads, though, you eliminate that waste basically entirely because each printhead is just, it parks and then drops to a lower temperature, comes back up. I imagine you still maybe spit out a little bit of material just to prime the head, and then you print your layer. I have to imagine it's much, much less waste than a full purge tower and making the poops and whatever else happens in there.
Yeah, and I noticed there's starting to be some open source stuff to build your own 5-head changers, 2-head changers.
Yeah, I think it's slowly becoming,
still too expensive because you're building 5 hot ends. But
right, if you're using genuine parts, that's $500 in hot end right there.
Yeah.
But
easy, yeah. I did see someone built a. Their name is slipping my mind. The open source printers you were talking about building one. I was talking about building one. Voron, yeah. The Voron, apparently you can build tool changers on the Vorons now pretty easily, too.
Yeah,
they have official open source projects with that. What I wanted to do when I was looking at building a Voron, instead of just building, I was going to have a tool changer, but a manual one where I have to unclip it and clip new tools onto it. And I wanted to build my Voron using acrylic sheets that are UV like resistant, so I could put a laser cutter inside of it as well.
I'm always so terrified by those open frame lasers, man. It's
well, that's
such
why
a
I would build
thing,
the. That's why I would build the sheets, like the UV or the laser resistant sheets.
I'm pretty
as
sure
the
laser punches through the sheet, though. It's my understanding that on top of real industrial CO2 lasers, it's like tempered glass or a material that can actually like attenuate all of the laser power.
So you're,
but I think you might have more knowledge there than
your
I.
Your beam strength as a focus point. So once you're outside of that focus point, it dissipates really quickly.
Right.
So like
a
reflection back on the acrylic that's UV resistant, it's not going to pierce that. I have a CNC that has a laser head diode, like what people use in the printers. They're really slow. Like it the detail's nice, but the cutting stuff like that's really slow. But having it open like that is a nightmare because then you're walking in, you're wearing the dumb glasses the whole time. It's annoying. So, yeah, if you ever do that, I would definitely do a UV enclosure because it's just too much of a hassle.
Is it worth it? I got 15 meters of 2020 alu extrusion that is waiting on a project. I've also got 4 meters of lead screw M8 that I need to do something with. I guess I could throw a diode laser head on there and make a...
I think the new ones
laser,
might be. The new ones, mine's all got...
I'm just afraid of it because... Cutting deals with fumes and reflections, and it's such a hassle and nightmare.
Yeah,
it adds a tool to my repertoire to be able to do the projects and other things that I want. So
that is the thing. You got to vent it. You know, like acrylic puts off a pretty stinky fume, so you got to make sure your enclosure's tight enough and you make up air and it's venting outside. So that's the biggest thing is prep for all those things that come with it.
Probably not worth it.
Not unless you're doing it a lot. I don't think it is. It's becoming more popular. The built-in CO2 units are getting cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the new ones come with automatic fire extinguishing on them. That's a big plus. Yeah, I think XTools does. They have little CO2 canisters that'll automatically dump if there's a fire.
I remember those way back in the 3D printer days, like the early days with the ANET A8 and all that stuff. People were building the enclosures, and there were companies selling, like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure they were chemical, sort of like that guy.
Yeah, ruined the printer at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was an A8. A8s so like
were made of acrylic.
Anyway.
Like, they was destroyed if it caught fire.
Caught fire already anyway.
I get the advertisements for, like, the little bag that you hang on top of your printer, and if it catches on fire, I'm like, that's all dry, Kim. Like, you're ruining your printer. I guess you're saving your house, maybe, but...
A house is worth way more than the $200 piece of shit printer that catches fire. I'm not...
Oh, yeah, because it's always, like, an Ender 3 in the picture, and it's like, that thing can burn, I guess.
I don't care. I bought my Ender 3 for $100 at Micro Center, whatever. Yeah. If it dies, it dies. The parts alone are worth $100.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You can easily build a setup with a CO2 extinguisher if you wanted to automatically extinguish anything, but.
Yeah, but that's expensive.
It's just money.
A glass extinguisher grenade?
Yeah, the old school stuff that they had liquid chemicals in that would just go off.
You would just throw it at the fire? Mm-hmm.
Or they hung in attics. Like, there were these little metal wires, and they would just hang there, and if something caught on fire, it would just blow up.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, they're pretty toxic, but...
Yeah, they're all old carcinogens.
We don't care about those. I don't believe in them carcinogens.
To be fair, I guess what's more valuable, your business or your employees?
Either.
I guess it depends on the company you ask.
Yeah, yes. It really depends.
Amazon, the company.
Well, you have that now. Like some of the extinguishing now will kill like anybody in the room if they don't get out in time.
Well, CO2 will kill you, obviously, because you can't breathe. But, like, what else?
What do you mean? No, I can breathe nitrogen. I breathe nitrogen gas all the time.
So what other, like, extinguishing chemicals would be, like, that dangerous that it would, like, you would tap out, like, if you were in there for more than, like, a couple seconds?
Energen won't kill you, but when it releases, it releases 3,800 pounds per bottle into a room. So if there's not enough air venting, it'll actually blow the walls out.
What?
Like cinder block walls will just blow out if there's not enough room for expansion. And that was the problem with server rooms with that is when it discharges, it's so loud that the vibration will fry the hard drives.
Well, this reminds me of there was a DEF CON talk where it was like, okay, what's the fastest way we can destroy a hard drive and remove all of the data from it in data center with maybe 1 U of space, I think, above and or below. And there's people packing drives with thermite to try and destroy them and doing all sorts of crazy stuff, like lasers and mount a plasma cutter above the drive so that when the feds show up in your office, it's like, oh, God, the feds are here. Pull the switch. And these plasma torches just go and destroy the drives in your array.
That'd be awesome. It'd be cool just to do that. Like, how can we destroy this?
They were experimenting with, like, shape charges and all sorts of funny stuff. It was like, oh, yeah, we went to the bomb range and, like, had the bomb squad come out. We were using these shape charges to blow holes through platters. And
I feel like
it'd be really fun.
Yeah.
But, like, you're going to get investigated by the feds and you're going to prison forever for that.
I want to say if you really wanted to act like you're caring about your system, but at the same time not. Just set it up with CO2 instead.
CO2
won't fry it. Because they used to cover server rooms with CO2. But the danger of it's why they kind of
stopped. Fill the server room with nitrogen or CO2 so that when the bad guys come in to steal your data, they just go...
Yeah.
Or just fill it with a whole dry chem system.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, right.
Growed it all.
Unauthorized access detected.
Because then it just looks, you know... Hey, I'm just trying to protect the server.
I feel like the federal government, they have enough tools to get past the corrosion, though, and, like, that stuff.
Almost certainly. I mean, just unless not a you bunch can destroy it at the microscopic
shotguns.
Level.
You know, just they walk in, shotguns go off, and just blast every hard drive.
We found out that a 3.5-inch hard drive will stop at 9mm.
Yeah, that was
did you go shoot some?
Yeah, we went and shot some. So we went with James, and James had his grandparents' hard drives, and they said, destroy these for us. And we went to the range, and we shot one with a 9mm just to see if it would stop the bullet, and it
did. When did you do that? You never invited me
along?
This
was like two or three years ago. Yeah.
It was longer than that. It was before COVID.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was pre-COVID when we did this, yeah. But it was.
I don't have any hard drives that need destroyed.
I'd have to dig through my archive of video, but...
I'm pretty sure I've seen it. I mean, I know what happens, right? I've seen people shoot them with shotguns and 9mm.
I feel like that could
22.
Be a cool project. Like, not to actually wear it, but here's your... active shooter bulletproof vest for an IT guy. Like, just run in the server room, build a bulletproof vest out of hard drives, and you're good, right? Like,
that would be a really funny project video, though. It's just this guy with this colossal pile of hard drives surrounding his torso.
Casual coders crossover with Demo Ranch, anyone? Like,
I have a boxing dummy that I've been meaning to shoot in my garage. We could just find enough.
Whoa, no, we just got a Super Troopers this, you know? Just Jesus. Throw it on and see what happens.
Helldiver. Here's your hard drive. Here's your hard drive armor. Get in there.
Automatons will kick your ass, but okay.
No, you make your body armor out of the automaton parts, which is the spent hard drives. Exactly, yeah.
It's the circle.
That's how it all started.
I'm trying to find that picture.
But yeah, we found, like, obviously the little 2.5-inch drives won't stop anything. Like, anything would just go right through them.
Oh, I thought that those 2.5-inch drives were so dense they'd stop a 50.
No. It would just anything just sailed right through them. It was up to 9mm was get stopped by a 3.5-inch drive, and it just barely stopped.
So,
too. Like, you could see the bullet just barely peeking out of the back casing of the hard drive.
So we got all this 3D printer filament.
Yeah.
3D printed body armor. I'm gonna 3D print some level 3A plates. Yeah.
I wonder how thick you would
just
have to
slide in the hard drives.
I wonder how thick you would have to make a 3D printed plastic to stop a bullet.
5 inches.
You think is someone tested this? Is it 5 inches?
I don't know. I'm just throwing out a number. That's my guess.
Solid infill 5 inches. You're more than good.
It depends on what caliber.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your rating?
We're talking 9mm.
17 HMR. Yeah. 223. 308.
Well, what is it? 5.7?
950 JDJ. I mean, what are we stopping?
God.
5.7 will penetrate level 3, right? So that would be like your testing point. Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, they're blue hollow points.
$1
will
per
penetrate
test.
Penetrate level 3 body armor.
Well, I know a guy who's got the 57, so, you know. I've shot 5.7 before. It's an interesting cartridge.
So was he. He got to shoot a P90.
Oh, yeah.
That was actually a fun day. We went to the range, and this cop showed up, and he
did you have a full, like, proper P90?
No, it was a civilian.
PS90?
Yeah, but it was fun.
It was at least SBR to have the full-length barrel.
I have the full-length barrel.
It looks sort of cool with the full-length barrel. It also looks really dorky.
Oh, yeah. It looks lame.
Yeah, there you go.
There's there's the video of us stopping the bullet with the hard drive.
I mean, that would hurt if you were to hit.
It would.
Yeah, we all know that.
You would definitely be bleeding, but there wouldn't be a bullet through you, I guess. So
I feel like that's it.
Yeah.
That's safe, really?
Safe enough. Wear a hoodie underneath. You'll be all right. Look, if worst case scenario happened and you had nothing else, I think that'd be ideal, right?
The problem is that you better hope they aim for the platter, because the other part of the hard drive is just a steel case and a PCB. That's going right through.
So if
John Wick movie, he's just using just a shield hard drive.
So JLC manufactures 20-layer PCBs, right? You think 20 layers of copper and fiberglass in a 1.6mm board?
No,
you think that's
not
enough?
Stopping anything. Yeah? Maybe that'll stop the 17. That ain't stopping anything bigger than that.
Stop a 22 short.
Yeah, probably stop a 22.
22 short. We have to append that. I think it's
22 short. Yeah, short. 22 long goes through.
Just in case you're being assaulted by, I don't know, something that shoots 22 short.
Being assaulted by a swarm of angry bees.
Well, no. Even the AM-180 shoots 22 long rifle, and that would go right through. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, so what type, you mentioned the different chemicals for, like, a data center. So what other types of, like, chemicals are common for, like, data center protection?
Fentanyl.
That keeps IT guys sane. pretty much data centers. The old Halon's still out there, which is deadly and terrible for the environment. That's why we don't use it. But pretty much you're looking at Energen, FM200, and Novec 1230, which is Sapphire is what you're going to see. It's the branding of it. All those are safe. Sapphire is actually nice because they don't recommend you to, but you could stay in the room. So, like, they'll use it in power plant control areas. So, like, if you're in a nuclear power plant, you're having a meltdown, it catches on fire, it can discharge, and you can stay in the room. If it doesn't put out the fire, though, it turns to an acid gas that'll etch steel.
Oh.
Which is pretty cool. There's some reports of, like, firefighters venting it after the fire to where their trucks are, and it etches all the chrome down the truck.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it's based on, like, thermodynamics, so it pulls the heat out of the fire. But whatever happens with that chemical reaction, if it doesn't succeed, it goes south pretty quick. When you're in the school for it, they actually do a demonstration with a candle, you know, and they just dump the fumes off the liquid onto the candle, and it'll put it out. Then they do another one where they don't, and the smell's, like, very distinct. Like, as soon as you can tell it's doing the reaction and failing, you can smell the difference in the air.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. It's discontinued now, but
etching steel by accident does not sound like a good side effect.
Well,
here's my custom Damascus etched with this here,
I don't know. I think FM200 will do the same, and they're still pushing it. But sometimes, like, there's not a perfect solution, right? Like, water is ideal, but not with electronics. And CO2 is great, except that it kills everybody in the room, you know? So, which they have extra precautions for that, obviously. You know, there's pneumatic delays and pneumatic sirens in case all the electronics fail and the thing dumps. You still have, like, these dead set in place things to get everybody out of the area. But if you don't, then, you know, like, you die. So there's downsides of that. Same with in factories, like, anything downstream and lower, it's heavier than air, so it can settle there. So even if it discharges 100 yards this way, it can settle in over here where this guy is and take him out. But, yeah, server rooms, you still see some with water systems where it takes, like, two stages to release in the room. But, obviously, I mean, anytime you're releasing water on a server,
you're frying.
Yeah, you're frying everything. So if that's your backup and there's no data backup, like, you just kind of screwed yourself over what could be a pretty small fire.
Is that
or
the
even
main
a puff of smoke?
Yeah, is that the main reason why they don't use water? Is because, like, if a false alarm triggers, you've just destroyed your server room.
Yep. Yeah, if you have a sprinkler head, like, malfunction, it doesn't happen a lot, but it can, where the bulb just blows out. Now you just released water on all these servers for no reason. So a lot of the times when they do cover those rooms, it's a two-step alarm. So it requires both, like, a loss of air in the pipe. They'll fill the pipe with air.
Oh, and then, I think you were talking about that.
Yeah, it's called a pre-action. There's a single or dual interlock, but usually it takes air loss, and then smoke or heat will trip the other side, and, okay, it's a real fire, and then it'll dump all the water in the system.
I didn't know about that because I thought I heard or read somewhere about a potential attack, like for a store or something, which is you take a laser and you shine it onto the bulb, which heats up the liquid in there and shatters it and would cause the sprinkler to activate and douse a bunch of water in.
In a typical store, that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and it's a mess, and the water's black, and it's
nasty. Right.
It's not like the office where they're, like, kissing, you know, from the candles.
Right, it's not clear water. Yeah, it's not like, yeah, no, it's nasty
stuff. It's rusty,
stuff.
Stagnant, nasty water.
Well, also for, like, the server room, like, you know, everyone here has worked with electronics before and worked with, like, I've fried a computer before. Like, smoke comes out. Like, it is.
Everything is pre-charged with smoke. Your goal is
to
not
let out the magic blue smoke. Right.
Yeah.
Now, if you had perfect distilled water in your sprinkler system, you would probably be fine on your computers, but
then no,
it's full
no,
of iron from
the
pipe.
Yeah, right, exactly. When the water's coming out black, I don't know.
No, I don't think it's going to be very good for your electronics.
No, and you have some stuff, like you went to school for it, the Bezda's very early smoke detection, where literally you can light a match and it'll read it, but it's got multiple stages. So, like, alarm level 1 just alerts the building, and alarm level 2 does this thing, and alarm level 3 does this thing, and so it can stage it out. So if you do have a board fry, maybe it'll read it, but maybe it won't just take action. It'll give you a chance to rectify the issue.
So there's a server room that uses Vesda, and then it's a pre-action.
Yeah.
So it uses the Vesda system to trip the valves, so that way it's full of water, and then whenever you have the actual bulb break is when it discharges water. There was, I think, 30-something Vestas, and it was all covering their furnaces and their air handlers, and there was so much air movement that you would need a lot of smoke to trip it.
Yeah, which essentially those just use pipes. It's literally just like plastic pipe, and it's got holes drilled in it. So every drilled hole is a sampling port. So you have all these pipes running around the server room, and it's just sampling the air all over the place.
It's constantly pulling in air.
Yeah, they have a little fan. It just sucks it in constantly. And they'll actually acclimate the conditions in the room. So if it's starting to get dusty in there, like, it knows it's getting dusty. It doesn't just trip because it's a little dustier. Now, if you went in there and, like, started cutting drywall all over the place, it's going to read it as smoke most likely and trip everything. Because smoke detectors don't know if it's dust, a vape, or smoke, or, you know, anything that's going to scatter the light particulates in the head is going to be considered an alarm to that device.
So these are smoke detectors that are using the light method. I've heard of some smoke detectors that use the radioactive isotope to detect
that's
smoke.
An ion.
Yeah,
and that's so. Do you use both, or is it just one or the other now? Like usually the light based ones.
Some server rooms we use both. New stuff we install, we don't. It's all light based. But
just because it's cheaper, safer. Like, what's the reason of switching to it?
Yeah, and they're less sensitive. Ionizing smokes are really sensitive. I don't remember all the exact parameters for them, But ionizing will read different smoke differently. So if it's a darker smoke or a lighter smoke, both detectors will actually react differently on them. I'd have to look it all up because there's like a whole thing on the separate ways that they register the smoke as far as like which one will read which better. But a lot of it's cost, it's radioactive. That's why we've moved away from that. With some of the newer technology, a lot of these smokes have a computer inside of them. So they can start to differentiate everything a lot better than your basic just lights scattering and going into alarm.
We're putting microcontrollers in everything now. Oh, yeah. God.
Well, a lot of the new smokes now, like we program in the serial number for the board and the smoke, and the smoke has its own brain, and then the panel just communicates with that almost.
Oh, digitally?
Yeah. So it's all a digital communication. So the smoke will say, I'm an alarm, or I'm at this percentage rate of smoke per cubic foot, and it sends a signal to the panel, and then the panel from there will do whatever it needs to do, whether it's sometimes it'll just give you a heads up, sometimes it just dumps alarm.
So now are the panels like big old touchscreen like HMIs, or is that the direction they're going? It's just sort of terrifying, or
all the new ones are.
Oh my God.
And it's garbage. Touchscreens are garbage.
Right, yeah, that's exactly where I was about to go. That sounds awful for like critical safety infrastructure.
Well, and you figure like all that technology is behind because SKU listed for fire protection. So the stuff that's like hitting the market now is the technology
that was really old, resistive, shitty.
So luckily some of the panels will put hard buttons inside on the main board. So if you know what you're looking for, you can open it up, get to the main circuit board and do all the button pushing that you need to there. We can always program in. So you have buttons and everything's programmed now. Just
right. It's all
on the advanced panels. Yeah. It's all and if ors essentially. So it's just like programming an Arduino. They're all a little different, but so you could set up hard buttons if you wanted and have them right next to the crappy touchscreen that's there.
Gotcha.
So have you guys ever serviced, like, I'm just curious, just have you serviced like a printer farm or anything like that, like for the fire suppression systems?
I have not.
A Bitcoin farm.
You did Bitcoin? You did Bitcoin mining, like, thing?
Yeah. There's one somewhat locally. There's a couple guys that just hang out and smoke weed all day and do Bitcoin mining.
So but, wait, so they're smoking, but that doesn't set off the fire system. That's good.
No, I mean, as long as they're not in the server room, you know? So,
but that's where I vape. I go to the server room specifically to vape. Yeah. It's got all the good airflow so that all the vape goes away, right?
Yeah. But it's we've done that.
It's a nice hideout. No one knows I'm there.
We have some marijuana farms that we've been to where they're farming all that out. Different systems, but
legally,
before or after it was
legal.
Yeah,
it's all legal, so it's all medical stuff. But
well, now it doesn't have to be in a state anyway.
I don't remember how they destroyed that amendment. I thought there was a whole bunch of weird stuff that happened, but I don't know the state because I don't do it.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention to it either. I just know that it was like legalized, but it's like impossible to distribute is like what I've read.
Yeah, I thought there was a whole fight over it or something weird.
You like it's basically now you just can't be arrested for it, but good luck getting your hands on it. It's still a nightmare.
Is that how it went? I'm the same way. Like, I don't smoke it, so I didn't keep up with it that much. But.
I don't think any of us at this table have a single clue.
Yeah.
No. Circling back to 3D printers, so Seth, what printers do you have in your collection?
So I have an Ender 3 Pro, an Ender 3 V2, Ender 5 Pro, an Ender 5 S1, an Ender 5 Plus.
Big Creality guy over here.
So they're cheap. Print farm.
Yeah, I've only bought one of these new. In my SLA, I have a Mage Pro that I bought new. So my Ender,
is that also Creality?
Yeah, it is. So I bought the Ender 5S1 and the Mage new. Everything else was used. I bought three of those printers at once for $400. Like I haven't paid much for all of them.
Not bad.
And then I have an IDEX that's like a Tinglu. It's some off the wall. Same thing. It was used. It's a bit of a nightmare, and they don't make them anymore. I don't think. I'm seeing all the parts like dissipate. So I'm trying to get open source for the firmware and get all the original code, so when these hot ends break again, I can just build whatever hot end I want, re-put the parameters in.
You can just throw like a Ramps board in, or some whatever, Big Tree Tech board, something, and just throw Marlin on
and
it.
And that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's right now, everything runs Marlin. None of them, the S1's on factory firmware, nothing else is. I think Creality's firmware kind of sucks.
I flashed my own firmware as soon as I got my Ender 3, but the Bruce I haven't touched. Bruce
I'm on fine. Mostly stock Marlin on my Ender at this point.
That's pretty much what I did, yeah.
My Marlin's not too far out of stock. It just gives you more options for bed leveling. Everything's got a CR touch or a BL touch on it.
Yes, that's almost a necessary
upgrade.
I
killed the LCD panel on my Ender 3, so I had to do a bunch of funny modification.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I was stupid. I was like, the stupid Ender 3 display's garbage. It's this shitty blue display. I'm going to change this. I have this red gel film that I bought for whatever, some earlier project. So I'm going to take this thing apart and put the red gel film in, but I want it to look clean, so I'm not just going to tape it over top. I'm going to actually... So I pull the thing off and I remove the metal case that holds the actual liquid crystal like down to the printed circuit board and pull that off and put my layers of gel film underneath there and stick it back on and realize that I've like ripped off the like rubber conductive layer that adheres to the actual glass liquid crystal display. And then I damaged it, so like it never showed text correctly. So I had to buy a new one. I'm like, oh, this one on Amazon's fine. It's like the cheapest display I could find and it says 4 Ender 3. So I'm like, this will be fine, whatever. And I buy it, and I look at it, and then I realize the pinout's totally different. So now I have to make this custom wiring harness to get this thing to work. And I flashed Marlin like 50 times just trying to make this thing work. And then I finally realized super late one night, I'm like, I am an idiot. I've been looking at this pinout upside down and backwards. So just invert where I've got my pins connected, and it works.
I had to redo a pinout for the steppers. I flashed one of the firmwares, and all the steppers went backwards.
Oh.
And I was like, you know, I could change all this. Or I could just swap these wires around.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I try not to modify the firmware of my printers too much because I ended up going down a massive rabbit hole back when I first got into 3D printers.
Come on, man,
just,
you
got to
rice that thing out.
That's what I did, is that I, like, riced the crap out of an Ender 3, and I put the BL Touch, so I had to put custom firmware on that, and then I got a different hot end, so I had to modify the firmware for that, and then I just kept going down this rabbit hole of, like, changing and tweaking the firmware, and it just never stopped.
Alex has that printer, and now it's just got factory regular Marlin.
Yeah,
on
I know.
It.
He, like, reflashed. He put it back to factory.
I had to put it back together.
Stock.
I had to basically take that printer all the way apart, and then rebuild the thing to get
yeah,
it into actually
decent. Yeah, I fucked
it
up
state.
So
bad.
It was like, it was so bad because I was new into the hobby and I didn't have a lot of experience and it was just a nightmare for me to do that to it. So now
several of the parts were installed backwards.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But either way, it's fine. It's the printer works
right
now. And also, I'm probably...
Does
I don't
it? I don't think Alex has touched it.
Alex hasn't touched it because he's not...
So at what point do we send the repo man?
I'll be the repo man. I'll take the printer back. Also need to get the welder off of him. But no, I think I'm gonna switch to more getting like the like bamboo. Like just I wanna print. I don't care about fucking with the firmware, messing around with the stuff. I just wanna be able to print. So I've talked about this before, but like that's why the Bamboo Labs and the Prusas really appeal to me. Is that I can just set them up, print with them, not think about like, oh, is this print gonna fail? It's not gonna fail. It's I've printed a dozen or two dozen things in the past week on this printer and it's worked every time. So
I mean, I'm that way with my Ender at this point. I don't know. I it's configured
yeah, but even
to
then
actually
with,
just work. Yeah. I mean, I still hate it. I'm not a Creality fan, but
my biggest complaint
sorry.
About
no, well, I hate so the
I think
threes,
they're low budget, fairly crappy printers.
Oh, they are.
But
the threes, I think are I don't like them. Like I have both my threes now. One has a sprite on it, which the part cooling on it kind of sucks. I'm working on a new design for the fan ducting for that. But both of them, I can press start, and I know they're going to print. If they're going to fail, they're going to fail immediately because I was messing with the firmware and I royally messed it up somewhere. But those and both my Ender 5s, same thing. Like, I can press start every time. I think I've had one failed print on my 5S1 since November, and it failed immediately. It was a bed adhesion issue.
That's generally where I am with my Ender 3.
Yeah,
like, just click go, and it'll work as long as I get a decent first layer. Now, sometimes I have to fart with it, and it fails occasionally. But it's usually my own fault.
Yeah,
so
I there's plenty of failures where I've been like, I'm going to run a 0.8 nozzle on this basically stock hot end.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I'm kind of asking for failure. But I, like the 5 Pro, that didn't work at all when I got it. And I put a new tube on it, and I'm printing like the Cinderwing Dragons with the articulating wings and everything. 100% of the time, perfect. Like nothing's sticking. It cools down to the PEI plate. I just... whip it off and everything's perfect. The IDEX is generally a nightmare. And then like the 5 Plus, that thing's getting a full overhaul. But my goal eventually is, I like messing with them. I wish I liked just printing, but I don't. They'll start printing good and I'm like, I bet I can make this better, and I tear it back apart.
I rarely touch my printers anymore. I used to be more involved in the hobby and I've moved on.
It's something for me to do while the laser's running. So I might start a laser job and it might take an hour. So I have an hour where I'm like in the basement. I can play video games or I can work on this stuff. So the 5 is going to be like my constant project now. It'll get switched to Core XY, like a Mercury 1.1 kit converted to a Voron. And it's getting a custom hot end now. So that one may not work right for a while. Like that might be your creality where I just keep adjusting and fixing and like we'll see. But I like working on them quite a bit. But I agree. Like, I think if you just want to print and you don't want to deal with that stuff, like, just I don't think I would buy a Creality. Maybe a K1. Maybe they're better.
I've heard the K1s are really good for that. The K1s are, like, that's Creality's flagship. So they made sure that that one is, like, almost perfect where you can just set it up and it will just print. Apparently they got in some deep shit, though, because they used some open source software that they weren't supposed to use. But, again, Creality's in China. No one can prosecute them. So it's just... Oh well, I guess. Be upset at them.
It's
maybe
also
don't
gotta
buy
be
printer.
Really good because it's their competitor to the Bamboo. Like,
P1P, it is their direct competitor to the
like
P1P.
X1. So like, it X1. Has to be good. Otherwise, everyone's just gonna buy the actually better P1P.
Which, from what I've heard, though, they matched it. Like, the prices are the same. The performance is roughly the same. The big reason you'd want to get the Creality, though, is that so Bamboo only offers like one size for their big Core XY printers. They offer it's 256 squared, 256 millimeters squared or cubed. Sorry.
Oh right, and the K1's bigger.
And the K1 has a K1, which is the same size. They have a K1 Max, which is 300 millimeters cubed.
Yeah, it's basically the Ender 5 and a.
I really wanted to build the 350 cubed Voron, but I've given up on that. I think
you're not going to do that project anymore. You just don't.
It's such
it.
A pain to cut all the aluminum extrusions and build out a frame.
That's why I was...
It's like, such an expensive printer. Like, I have parts
you know they
floating
have
around,
kits,
but
right?
I don't have enough miscellaneous. I don't need to spend $700 on a printer, though. I have a functioning printer. It's more like $1,500, if we're honest, for a kit, too.
I've looked at like, doing a Voron. It's expensive. Even
I've got two functioning printers. Now, I rarely use my printer bot anymore. It's old, and I've done weird shit with it. It runs a 0.6 hot end. But honestly, it works great for big, like, chunky mechanical parts. When I just want to slap down a ton of material and make a big thing that's like a brick that holds stuff together, it works great for that. And then I use the Ender 3 for slightly more detailed stuff. And the Ender 3 is not perfect, but it doesn't have to be.
My issue is that I go through project stints where, like, for like a month, I'll print every day and do these massive projects, and then I won't touch my printer for 3 months. And then I do another month of just constant printing, which is, it makes it hard for me to justify buying another printer. Because I only use my printer, like, for long stints a couple times a year. So,
yeah,
like,
I'm even rarer than that. I do, you know, once a day or two every several months.
Yeah, so, it's hard to justify.
One or two objects, like a case for a project here or there, or...
Unless I want to do, like, start an Etsy store like you were talking about, like, which...
Yeah, do you sell your stuff?
Yeah, so we're just doing local vendor shows now. I was doing the laser stuff and all that on Etsy last year, and we moved, and I shut down the store for, like, 4 months and just lost the momentum.
Yeah. But was it going well when it was going?
It was. Yeah, good. Like, I was racking out orders quite a bit, because I do woodworking, too, so it was kind of, like, all mixed together.
Hey, I did some woodworking.
but yeah, so I'll sell them low. But then I like some bigger projects, too. Like, right now I'm making a life-size pit droid, so I just got to paint that and sand it now. And then my next project is going to be a couple of the larger droids from Star Wars. Yeah, we're talking like weeks of printing all 7 printers constant.
Oh, my God.
So that'll, if I had like a couple X1 carbons, I could probably do it in less time. But for running Enders, that's they're just going to run forever.
So then are those commissions, or do you just make it and then sell it?
I'm making these for me.
Like, oh, okay.
So down where my, you can call it my lab or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Right now it's just a brick wall basement. Like, I need to design it and make it kind of feel more cool, I guess. So I'm going to build a couple droids down there literally just to hang out.
Nice.
I might do a couple motorized ones, so add the servos and the heads
and
stuff.
Yeah, I was about to,
And then when we do the vendor shows, they can, like, hold our sign, like, essentially just to bring in different work. I know I've had people, like, approach me for vacuum molds and stuff like that. But it just shows, like, we have the capability to build these bigger, crazy things.
Right, yeah.
And those are the projects I like. Like, I really enjoy just building stuff out, whether it's with a laser, printers, or woodworking, whatever. So that just kind of shows, like, whatever your project is, I'll figure it out. Just like that, you know, board I made you not too long ago, last year, I guess.
Did you ever see that pie show board?
Yeah, I did see the pie show board that he made you. Yeah.
Yeah, so right now I'm in the middle of making Orlag from Valhalla, which I started forever ago, and, like, built everything. I have the dice left, the laser, and it's completely finished. But I like doing, like, these weird, nerdy, large projects, like, from scratch. although the droid stuff, I bought those files 100%. I did not design the droids from scratch.
I'm not good enough for that.
Yeah, that's no, very...
That sounds very challenging.
That's more of a creative thing, too. We're more analytical, engineering-brained guys.
I suck at organics and organic shapes. I just go for, like, sketches and, like, super basic primitives, just collect a bunch of stuff together to make a case for XYZ printed circuit board project thing. I cannot make, like, bodies or, like, artistic sculptures or, like, a rocket with, like, fumes coming off it, anything like that. I cannot do.
No, and the guy who made these, like, that's what he does. It's a handful of robots and droids and stuff that you can buy the prints from, and they have it so well refined on how it goes together. And there's
an installation. He has like he provide instructions and everything.
Oh yeah, with the bolts you need, the full build out kit, and then there's an open community that'll do like modifications to make them walk. And then if the plans are good and they're tested, he'll add those files to his.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, it's a really good community base on that, and that's what makes those worth building, in my opinion. Like it's not. I didn't find them on printables, and I was like, all right, let's try to figure this out. I enjoy that sometimes, too, but for a droid that's 7 foot tall, I'm not trying to, like, misprint stuff multiple times to figure it out.
Yeah, so, I imagine that's very expensive.
Not really, actually. So the pit droid's about 3.5-4 foot tall. I think that was, like, $28 for the designs.
Wow.
So, yeah, and his rule is, like, if you sell it locally, so, like, I talked to him, and I was like, hey, if I have someone holding a sign and somebody wants to buy the droid, like, how do you feel about it? Because it's a very strict, like, no-selling policy on his stuff. And the guy who designs them is real cool. He's like, look, buy the plane again, let me know you sold one, and as long as you buy a design for everyone you sell, I'm fine with it. So my plan isn't to commission, you know, the stuff, but if somebody wants to buy them, at least I can, and the designer's... a cool guy. I mean,
just don't tell Disney or you're gonna have a cease and desist on your front door.
That's probably fair.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's probably fair enough. And I'm surprised he doesn't get crap for it because his designs are really popular. It's Droid Division online. Like, okay. Look up his stuff, and he's got a really
don't show my
following.
Wife. She'll want me to make one. Yeah,
yeah, he'll give you something to do, I guess. Some of the smaller ones, like there's the RJ88, like you can print that in a couple days on an Ender 3.
Yeah.
What is the cost for all the materials for like a 7 foot droid? I have to imagine it's many, many kilos of material. So if you're putting lights and like boards and other like things in it to make it move, I imagine it gets pretty pricey fast.
I want to say it's like 8 to 10 rolls, something like that. And that's at like a 10% or 15% infill. So some of the guys, like, I like all the crazy stuff people build. So, like, the C-3PO builders clubs and stuff. Those guys are spending astronomical amounts of money. Same with the R2-D2s. They're remote controlled.
Yeah.
And, like, they'll blow bubbles and stuff for the kids at cons and stuff.
Yeah.
Those guys are dumping, like, 3,000 to 4,000 in their build-outs on some of that.
Easy, I have to imagine, yeah.
Yeah,
so cool, though.
It is. Like, I want to build it, but I'm like, oh, that's a lot of money.
Hey, it's just money.
Yeah, it's just money.
That's one of my projects that I wanted to do for a while, and I never got to it. I was participating in this cosplay group, which I still do, like, once a year. I still participate. And they wanted to do a Star Wars character set. So we have, like, different character sets. Like, for Marvel, I was Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy, which I have a 3D-printed helmet from that.
Nice.
And then for DC, I'm Superman because I have blue hair. I have blue eyes. I have blue
hair.
Eyes.
Hair. Yeah.
Blue, I have blue eyes and dark hair, so they're like, he's Clark Kent. And
there's the university coming out of you.
Yeah. And then then they're talking about doing a Star Wars group, and originally they were going to have me be some random character, and I told them, no, I want to be either Mando or I want to be one of the clone troopers, is basically what I said. And so they're like, well, you have a 3D printer. Could you 3D print that? And I'm thinking to myself, that's going to take me weeks.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much printing. I got to paint it because the character I was going to do is Captain Rex, and he's got blue markings all over him.
Yep.
So I got to paint it, too. I can't just have a white, black and white armor set. And it's going to be like a nightmare to print. I never got to it because it's like too much work. And because I already run 3 businesses on the side. So it's not like I have the time to do something like that.
Time? What's that?
Yeah, what's that?
That's the whole point of the Ender 5 Plus is literally just to print armor. Like I'm building the whole thing around that cause. So it's going to run a 0.8 nozzle because I'm going to be sanding and bondoing and filling everything anyway. So I'm just looking at quick, cleanish print times.
And if I were to buy a Prusa XL, that's what I'd use it for, is I would just get a big nozzle on it and just print massive parts with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the goal. It's running, like, the new Creality's Bright or Spider hot end, the V3. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if it flows as fast as they say it does. If not, a Dragon hot end will get slapped on it.
Have you ever looked into the
CHT nozzles?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is the CHT nozzles, where they like they heat up and they actually split your filament into three separate paths and then put it back together in the nozzle. And it's like you can put it on like a normal hot end and it'll print way faster.
It like doubles the flow rate, yeah.
I've seen them, but I haven't messed with them yet.
They're only $20. Honestly, they're worth like throwing the $20 at it and trying it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially 20. If you do a lot of printing.
Yeah. Yeah, because right now I have a ton of nozzles, but they're all cheap brass. When I bought these last three printers in like a bulk, the guy was like, here's all the parts I was going to use to try to fix it. And it was like all these belts and all these nozzles. I loaded up like a small tackle box with nozzles.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy crap, there's
I still got bags 50. Of like V6 nozzles in like 0.4 and 0.5. All sorts
of
crazy shit.
The amount
of
0.4 nozzles I have is insane. And
I switched
even use
to
it.
Volcanoes on my printers. Really? I don't know if I agree with it anymore, but I liked the added flow rate capability and just big nozzle. I can melt whatever I want.
You really think Ender 3 is going to take advantage
How
of that?
How did it do with PLA?
It does fairly well.
Did it? Because that's the only thing that steered me away from the volcano. Some people said that it can clog on PLA.
I've never had it clog. I did purchase a super shitty titanium heat break that I thought would work well off of like AliExpress. Mm-hmm. It was awful. It jammed instantly. It would heat up, and then if, as soon as you cooled down the printer, it was clogged permanently until you drilled that thing out.
That sucks.
I was hoping, but it didn't work out like I hoped.
Yeah, so I'm curious how this will go because I ran the Spider V3, and then it's got a small Bowden tube, and then it's got an Orbiter V2 extruder just mounted right on top. I printed the enclosure for it. And then the filament runout sensor is just mounted right on top of the V2. So my goal was like, because a lot of these Ender 5s, the runout sensor is a foot and a half away.
Yeah.
So you're pulling the filament out. It's not like it's much, but it just seems wasteful to trash
it. Does.
It.
I agree.
So we'll see how the whole thing ends up working together.
Have you shifted any of your machines to direct drive?
Yeah. So I have a V2 that's
setups.
Yeah,
so I hate them so much.
The 5S1 still Bowden, and the 3 Pro still Bowden. The S1 comes direct drive. The V2 I switched to the Sprite extruder, and then I'm switching the 5 Plus to direct drive. The ADEX printer has direct drive on both, and it's CAM communication from the factory, so that's kind of nice. Not that there's that much on the heads, but.
So, Quentin, you've been really quiet. How's your Prusa Mini doing for you?
It's fine.
Just prints.
It just prints.
Because it's like Prusa's like Toyota of printers. Just like it works.
Right. Exactly.
That's it. That's all I have to say about it.
Do you even have to do the regularly scheduled maintenance? I don't know.
All I do is dust it off once in a while. Maybe lube the linear rails and it's good.
Yeah.
So funny enough, I just lubed the rails the first time probably about 2-3 weeks ago.
Nice. Yeah.
And I've had it probably what two.
Two years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, two-ish years.
Because that was my first printer, is his old Ender 3 V2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you sold it, and you're like, I hate this thing. I'm getting a Prusa Mini, and you haven't gone back. Prusa Mini's just sold you.
To be fair, I did warn you that it needed some TLC.
It did, but it worked. I had it working, and then I was like, I bet I can make it work better. And it went to direct drive, like, within the first 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried doing the direct drive on my original Ender, and it was a fucking nightmare.
Well, yeah, you didn't do it right.
Yeah, apparently I didn't do it right.
He didn't. You know how you need the little spacers that go over the like nuts so that you don't crush the like wheels? He didn't do those.
Oh, so,
he just crushed the wheels into the print that he made. So they rubbed in, and they like really, they were grinding and
nice.
Not good.
Yeah, it was mostly, which I do still have the
primarily mechanical faults on your own.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
They were, which they're fine, but it was because I was learning and I was still new. But honestly, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to buy a printer that's ready to go at this point and not worry about it. So
you need a printer so you can print all the parts to modify
right.
the other printer.
Yeah.
Well, they're self-replicating machines. Yeah. You can print your own mod parts to make it better. I did that with my printer bot.
I saw a project where someone designed a printer that could print. It could print itself.
Oh, yeah, because it does the weird thing.
It has like a weird design. Yeah. So, what it could do is that
it prints those four towers that it screws up on.
It sits on four towers, and then it could print more onto itself so it could like stack on top of itself and make it Z height higher.
It has an infinite.
But it has to build on itself to make the Z height infinite.
That's so weird.
It's so weird because his idea, apparently the whole concept of this is that it's supposed to be eventually he wants it to be able to print itself. So that like, every component.
The guy's working on like 3D printing motors with the thing. It's yeah. really
this
weird.
This dude is like trying, he's trying to make it so you can like ship one of these machines off to like a planet.
To Mars. And
to like Mars. It, and then just leave it run for like 20 years. And then you come there and there's a fully complete like factory already on Mars ready to go.
I mean, it's a cool concept. Idea, I hope it
Some,
works out
like,
for him.
Some like sci-fi shit. But like it's, he's got a lot of work to do.
I feel like printers are sci-fi shit. Like on their own,
because we live in a weird cyberpunk dystopia already. Yeah. It's crazy the amount of stuff that we have. Yeah,
but yeah, the it was just a weird project. And I watched the video where he did like the 3D printing with the motors and the copper.
I haven't seen that yet. Summary.
The summary is that like he was using copper. I think it was copper sulfate is how he was getting the copper, mm-hmm. which is like a cheap chemical you buy on Amazon. And he was like directing the electrode to where he wanted the copper to stick.
Oh, deposit.
To. Yeah, because his issue was is that when you electroplate an entire 3D print, is that it's not even.
Right.
And that's just a downfall of electroplating, especially with a inconsistently conductive material like conductive filament. So he was like literally directing the electrode using an Ender 3, like an electrode on the end of an Ender 3, to just like direct where he wanted the copper to go was how he was doing it. But he would like 3D print the PCB as like he would print like canals almost to put the sulfate solution in, and then that would make his PCB layout, and then from there he would direct the anode one of the ends of the electrodes around to like stick the copper down.
I remember when we were talking about the 3D printing PCBs project and that got dropped.
That did get dropped because my dad basically told me that it's going to be impossible because you're never going to get consistent like layers on top
they
of
don't
it.
Have to be perfectly consistent.
He said that it probably wouldn't be like conductive at all. Like he said it wouldn't work.
I think it's doable, but I think it'd be a struggle.
It would be a struggle, and I don't know if we want to spend a year and a half developing that out.
It's not worth it. I struggle enough with all my projects as is.
It would be easier if we just took like his laser cutter and just laser cut a laser etched copper
right
to make PCBs. Yeah,
yeah, you can't laser etch copper for PCBs.
Well, you can like see
unless you got like
though.
A fiber laser or something, but you can see and see it.
Not yet. I have to make more money. That's we essentially make money on our side business and just buy more stuff to build different stuff.
Yeah, I gotta figure out how you sell your stuff because I always make cool projects, but I don't know how to sell them correctly. I mean, they're also ungodly expensive. I just bought the faces for this, which are printed circuit boards with gold lettering and like lightning in the faces. It was $171 for 15 panels, enough to make 15 of these D20s.
And see, that's where I think like eventually, and maybe we can get a group thing going. Like we can all just make a handful of expensive stuff, find a con, and buy a table. Because I don't make enough expensive projects that go towards like one person that's into something.
Yeah, but like I need to sell these for like $150 each. I think the material cost is about $50. Plus I have several hours of labor in actually assembling the thing and epoxying it all together. And I have to do some micro soldering because I'm using direct contact on the one's face. I have charging on the little dots there.
Yeah.
So there's work that has to happen with each one of them.
I saw that and I was wondering why everything else but the one.
Yeah, so solid. I'm going to have to make a little charging base and you'll set it down on the charging base and four little pogo pins will come up and press onto those conductive copper pads. It's also how it exposes its serial wire debug interface, so the ability to reprogram the firmware on there.
What is that?
Serial wire debug?
No.
Oh, electronic D20. It's a die for tabletop role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, whatever, you know, system requires a 20-sided polyhedral die, icosahedron, i.e. D20.
So it's just a D20, and then what happens with it, though?
It runs math inside of it and knows what it rolls, when it's being rolled, and theoretically lasts a long time. I put a lot of time and effort into making sure that that thing has a stupid low power draw. It draws 3.5. It draws about 3.5 microamps when it's just standing there, sitting in its standby mode, like on a table. So if you don't touch it, the battery lasts 4 years. But the instant you start rolling it, is when it gets a little lower.
Yeah, but you don't have any measured time for how long it's going to take to actually drain the battery. But I bet you it is like a long time that you could probably use it before you have to charge it.
I don't know. The LEDs I think are probably sucking down 500 milliamps right now.
How big is the battery?
200 milliamp hour.
Okay, so, well.
But each roll is only several seconds.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, over one normal D&D session, I think the battery dropped like 0.02 volts or something, like microscopic. It was tough to measure, so.
It was almost unmeasurable, like low.
Right, like 4.02 down to like 3.98 or some weird. So I mean, I'll figure it out when it stops rolling. That means it'll hit 3 volts on the battery, and then the battery management system will cut it off and say, hey, this battery voltage is too low.
So unless you're playing D20 Risk, you're probably pretty good.
I imagine so. I mean, honestly, I'm at the point right now where I've used it several days in a row. I've gone to several sessions with it. I don't roll it constantly.
You can use it tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So, I don't know. As long as it lasts several weeks, good enough for me. I mean, I'm ready to sell them. That's why I ordered 15 copies of the board, but also because of the way it is for 5 PCBs, which is the minimum quantity, so 5 dice worth of faces, it's like $116. For 15, it's like $150. So it's like, well, I may as well just do the 15. So,
yeah, it might be worth to do like a collaboration. We'll find a convention, and we'll all bring our most expensive, nerdiest stuff.
I think it'd be cool. Yeah. I mean, there's Gen Con that goes on if you're going for really nerdy stuff. That's in Indianapolis, Indiana, somewhere, I don't know, west, I think. Not too far. There's Colossal Con up at Kalahari in Sandusky. And I know there's also Ohio Con down in, I think, Columbus.
Yeah.
But those are more like anime sort of things. But I went to MAGFest, and there were all sorts of like D&D stuff on tables. There were like rubber dice.
Oh, no, nerds do nerd things. Like,
yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. Whoever would have thought? But yeah, all sorts of dice and like weird things. People like SLM print, so metal, selective laser melting.
Oh, cool. The metal
like
prints.
Metal dice. And they're like wireframe, sort of like this without the faces on it. And they make such a nice noise when you roll them and they clank together. They, like, chime.
That would be so cool. Yeah,
they're pretty neat.
But probably ridiculously expensive, but cool.
Yeah, people...
You know how expensive metal printing is?
It's not that expensive.
Really?
I wanted to metal print the frame for this out of 316 stainless, and then I realized that it weighs a pound. Yeah. And I was right. So then when you roll it, your table goes dunk dunk, and you put these dents in every table you roll it on. So I was like, maybe that's not
that would
the
be
right
a good
move.
Meme. Get a D20 that's that size made of steel.
Someone milled a huge aluminum D20 at some point. It was like 15 pounds, like this big. And yeah, it dents concrete, it dents floors, tables. I mean, it'll break through the table if you were to roll it.
Could you use an aluminum welder to 3D print it? Like, you could make
that
design.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right?
Like TIG?
Just, yeah, just tap, tap,
someone
tap,
made
tap,
a
tap.
MIG welder, like, off of an Ender 3, and he, like, sort of printed a Benchy with it. It wasn't great, but it did kind of work.
Yeah.
It's a budget metal 3D printer.
I could see there being
bad, but yeah,
a way to do it. It would be rough, though, because you're going to have the splatter unless you encase it and keep welding gas in there.
Metal printer for $300 is just a $100 Ender 3 from Micro Center and a $200 welder from Everfreight.
Yeah. you need way more than that. I'm sorry to break it to you, but yeah, you need like argon gas to shield the whole thing.
Yeah,
but if
yeah.
you did it enclosed, you could just hit a puff of argon, seal it in there, and you're good.
I guess.
Or use flux core if you want it really splattery.
Hey, we got the flux core wire.
Yeah, we have a flux core welder. Yeah.
And we got enough Ender 3s, I think.
Hey, I'm fine with it as long as it's not my Ender 3, right?
Well, Alex isn't being utilized.
Yeah. It sounds like we have a spare.
All right. Well, this has been the Casual Coders Podcast. Thank you all for listening to our random conversations. You can find us on social media. We've got Twitter. We've got YouTube. We've got everything else. We also have a main channel where we upload yearly random project videos. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you guys in the next one.